Hello, Peter Mayers here with The Book Show on ABC Radio National. Today, opening up The Red Book, the story of Carl Jung's personal journal of fantastical thoughts and images, written and drawn in his own hand and hidden away after the psychiatrist's death in 1961. Literary scholar Alan Dilnot discusses the place of music in fiction, and we discover some surprising literary influences on award-winning thriller writer Tom Robb Smith. In the world of psychology, the Red Book is famous, even though few people have set eyes on it. Until now, that is. The Red Book is a manuscript written and illustrated by Carl Jung, the Swiss psychiatrist who pioneered the exploration of the psyche through the interpretation of dreams, mythology, and symbols. In 1913, Jung began keeping a kind of journal, documenting fantasies and imagined conversations. He continued it off and on for more than 20 years, saying the material provided the foundations for his life's work. The Red Book is the product of Jung's exploration of his own unconscious, and much of its 205 pages consists of colourful illustrations. Since his death, Jung's family have kept the Red Book private. For more than 20 years, it was hidden away in a bank vault, until Sonu Shamdasani convinced Jung's heirs that it should be published. Sonu Shamdasani is the Philemon Professor of Jung History at the Wellcome Trust Centre for the History of Medicine at University College in London. And he's the editor of the Red Book, which has just been published by W.W. Norton, with high-quality digital scans of the original German manuscript and an English translation. I spoke to Professor Shamdasani early this morning, Australian time, and asked him why Jung's volume is called The Red Book.
Well, quite simply because one of the versions of it is the one that Jung transcribed in a calligraphic script and he illustrated in a red leather folio volume.
He had a different name for it himself, I think, didn't he?
Yeah. Embossed on the spine is the term Liber Novus, the new book. That I take to be the actual title.
The original manuscript has been kept in a bank vault in Zurich for more than 20 years. Why did Jung's heirs feel so protective of it and the need to hide it?
Well, it was a work that was surrounded by myth for decades. Jung, in a way, kept it separate from his family. He'd shared it with certain intimates and associates, but left with it without any clear instructions at his death. And during his lifetime, he'd intended it for publication, but was ambivalent about it and eventually decided not to publish it.
And so his heirs know what his intentions were.
Yeah, nothing was made explicit. He made various statements to people that I found later indicating that it should be perhaps put in an archive, restricted until a certain number of years after his death, but even these were not specific.
Because I guess that's what we'd normally expect to happen with a writer's files or notes or letters, that they would go to a university library or something like that,
yeah.
And perhaps it may be 20 years until certain people have passed away or something.
Sure.
But were the family worried about what people would make of it?
Well, to start with, Jung himself was worried about what people would make of it. So he was concerned about, at one level, about his reputation in medical and scientific circles. This was one of the reasons, amongst others, led him to withhold the book. When I began discussing it with the family at that stage, no one who was alive then had studied it. Then once one had actually discussed the situation, it was clear that A, this was a work written and intended for publication. B, it was not an intimate work in the sense in which it was not concerning his private life. There were actually even very few dreams in it. And indeed, it forms the foundation of his collected works. So when one considered it from those angles, there didn't seem to be any reason not to publish it.
Why was he concerned that it would affect his reputation?
Because this is a work that I describe it as a work of psychology written in a literary and prophetic form. In terms of style, it's quite different from any of his other works. And it's also illustrated with quite striking paintings that, this, remember, was a time when there was a lot of controversy about avant-garde movement in art just to begin with. So it's something that would have shifted the whole, could say, social location of his work.
The book, I haven't been able to see the actual book because editions of the publication haven't reached Australia yet. But I have been able to look at images scanned online, and it almost resembles a kind of illuminated manuscript, something, you know, from several centuries past, the way he's inserted these drawings and used a kind of Gothic script.
Absolutely. It's a work that, if you chanced upon it, one might, just looking at the writing, at least assume that it's written in the Middle Ages.
Why did he choose that style, do you think?
I mean, he himself says that he knew no other way to cast it, given the preciousness of the material, but in such a form that did justice to it. There's a sense in which, and this is a speculation, it's not something explicitly stated as such, that the book, as it were, returns to a time before science and religion are separated in a clearly demarcated sort of form. And it's fitting, given the level of the concerns that he has in the work, that it goes back to that period of time.
And what are the illustrations actually of?
To describe that, I just describe the text a little bit more, because the work starts with a text. 1913, Jung begins a controlled experiment with active fantasy, i.e. induces fantasies in a waking state, and enters into the dramas that ensue and enters into dialogue with the characters. Then in 1914, in the summer, he becomes convinced that some of his fantasies were precognitive of the outbreak of the war, and begins to write this 1,000-page manuscript in which he transcribes the main fantasies over a several-month period and appends to them a lyrical commentary and interpretation, like looking to what extent his fantasy material is connected to the events of the world at large and what this sort of meant. And also to what extent that the fantasies depicted general forms of psychological functioning within himself. Now, he initially begins illustrating this with images and paintings that represent the fantasies in the text. However, it takes some time to transcribe the material, and eventually the fantasies become active fantasies or active imaginations, to use this term, in their own right. They, as it were, continue the sequence depicted in the text and don't relate directly to the text pages that they accompany.
And they're very colourful images. Some are mandala-like, I guess, reflecting Jung's interest in Eastern philosophies and religion.
Yes, but I would say it's the other. In a certain sense, the sequences should be reversed. It's his initial interest in Eastern thought in this context was sparked by the fact that he was drawing these mandala-like structures and thought this had some correlational connection with similar forms in Tibetan Buddhism, for example.
Okay, so the ideas came from himself first, and that led him then to look towards... the images came from within him, and that led him to look towards what they might be connected with in the world.
Yeah, in that case, at the same time, it's clear that he's... In the period between 1910 and 12, he did an extensive study of comparative mythology and religion and folklore, assembled a vast library on these topics. These materials clearly stimulated his fantasy and entered into them. So some of the figures do start from certain classical motifs, which he then elaborates.
This is The Book Show on ABC Radio National. I'm speaking to Sonu Shamdasani in London, who's the Philemon Professor of Jung History at the University College in London. And we're discussing the Red Book, which has just been published. This is a manuscript written in Carl Jung's own hand, and which has been hidden from the world for decades, and is now being made available in a high-quality reproduction with an English translation. Sonu Shamdasani, there is speculation that at the time Jung began this book, began writing it, he was actually suffering from a breakdown himself, that he had a psychosis, that he was ill, essentially.
Well, this is basically a myth perpetrated by the Freudians with the aim of discrediting his ideas. If you look at this period, there are no indications that I've found that he was anything other than fully functional. He maintained a family life, he had five children, a large household, he maintained his analytic practice, his scientific psychological society, and had extensive periods of military service in the Swiss Army. I've also studied his extant 1912 and 1913 can find absolutely no trace of any sort of permeability between the materials he's engaged with and his correspondences. So it's quite clear Jung was engaged in a controlled experimentation in which there are clearly spontaneous elements in which there's certain extremities of experience which he encountered, but this was within a controlled context.
Because some of the images are very dark, quite frightening. Some of the stories he relates in the book, as I understand it. And this did come at a time, well, as you say, he had just split with Freud and World War was breaking out in Europe. So it was, a dark time to be undertaking this experiment.
Well, to take the first level, I mean, I think, again, there's a massive mythology built up around that. I simply think that significance that Freud in his life has been vastly overplayed. To some extent, you can see, if you actually look at the date sequence, it's his interest in exploring these aspects of his experience, which is a return to his own spiritual preoccupations, that actually precedes his final sort of break in his relation with Freud rather than post-dating it, in the sense the other way around. And I don't see any impact of Freud in the materials in the Red Book or in his Black Books during this period. He's clearly moving in a universe of ideas that has no relation to Freudianism. It's another issue concerning the war, in that it clearly is taking place in the context of, at that point, the greatest carnage ever seen in Western Europe, which is making a tremendous impression on him as many other of his contemporaries, and he's attempting to understand what does this mean? How is what takes place within an individual's experience connected with the events at large? That's what he's grappling with.
And how fundamental is the Red Book to the development of Jung's ideas? I mean, he called it the foundation of his thinking.
I think that that's exactly the case. Jung worked on it directly, transcribing the text for 16 years, and he spent the remainder of his life attempting to comprehend it in the sense that to place it within a historical and comparative context. So his direct and indirect work on it really forms a major part of his life. That said, it's not as if it forms a one-to-one translation, in which case you could sort of say, well, you have his collected works, you don't need the Red Book because everything from one is transferred into the latter. It's more a depiction of how he lost his soul and regained meaning in his life, reconnected with his soul, and in so doing, developed a conception of what he calls the individuation process, namely how the individual develops over time. Now, elaborated in this work, what I call a personal cosmology, and many of the paintings in it form aspects of this. And this sort of forms the basis of his later work. He's attempting to see to what extent the process he underwent there was typical and universal, to what extent it was purely individual.
Obviously, this work is going to be of great interest to scholars of Jung or people who follow his theories. What about a general audience? Would a general audience be able to come at this book?
In a way, the work can be simply read as a human document, telling in a certain sense a very simple story, namely how one individual, one of the, at that point, rising stars of European psychiatry, supremely well-read and cultured man, lost his way in life, and the intense efforts he had to go to and the experiences he had to undergo to recover the meaning of his own existence. What's interesting or unusual about this is that it's not a purely individual story. In so doing, Jung developed a psychology that has enabled many individuals to refine meaning in their lives. So it's a tale both of how one individual refines their way, but also does this through creating a vehicle that has enabled others to do likewise. So regardless of whether one agrees with his conceptions or not, whether one is a believer or a non-believer, it's quite something to be able to trace the connection between an individual's fantasy and how, out of working on this, reflecting on this, elaborating it, he can develop tremendously influential psychology. So that's my own interest as a historian of psychology.
Will it, however, also give fresh material to critics of Jung? I mean, in just the way he feared before his death and his family feared after his death, that it'll be used to attack him?
Well, with a work like this, people will find their preconceived received opinions. People that worship Jung will find their views confirmed, and Jung's detractors will also find the same. But I think that just simply to find one's own ideas confirmed sort of misses the opportunity that this text gives, which is of just giving a completely new view of Jung that completely transforms everything one previously thought one knew about him. So at the very least, all the biographies will have to be rewritten or started afresh because they've just missed the most important document.
Sonu Shamdasani speaking to me from London earlier today. He's the editor and one of the translators, together with Mark Kyberts and John Peck, of The Red Book by Carl Jung. Sonu Shamdasani also is the Philemon Professor of Jung History at the Wellcome Trust Centre for the History of Medicine at University College London. The Red Book is published by W.W. Norton and costs $200. And the original manuscript is now on display at the Rubin Museum of Art in New York. It will be there until late January. You can find more details on the Bookshow website, abc.net.au/rn/bookshow. I'm Peter Mayers, and this is The Bookshow on ABC Radio National.